This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. I want to start today's show by reading the first couple pieces of a news release sent out by University Hospitals of Cleveland, because I want to make sure that I explain this correctly from the medical professional's perspective. Quote, University Hospitals has secured two clinical trials that will provide the investigational antiviral drug remdesivir to hospitalized adults with a pneumonia due to the novel coronavirus. One trial will focus on COVID-19 patients with moderate illness. The second will focus on patients with more severe illness who may require care in the intensive care unit. Now, these studies will be conducted by the UH Clinical Research Center under the leadership of Dr. Grace McComsey. She's Vice President of Research and Associate Chief Scientific Officer at that hospital, and she is also our guest live on the phone right now. Dr. McComsey, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Michael.
And we are also joined by Dr. Robert Salata. He's the program director at University Hospital's Roe Green Center for Travel and Medicine and Global Health. He's also a professor of medicine, epidemiology, and international health at Case Western University and chairman of the Department of Medicine at University Hospital's Cleveland Medical Center. Dr. Salata, we're grateful for your time as well.
Thank you, Michael.
Dr. McComsey, let me just start with you, because our listeners just heard me say remdesivir. What is that?
So, hi, Michael. I'm happy to be here. So remdesivir is a new antiviral. Viruses like coronavirus replicate by copying their genetic material. They use an enzyme called RNA polymerase. So remdesivir blocks the replication of the virus by attacking that enzyme. So it's a drug that has been used or made by Gilead for the purpose of Ebola during the outbreak. It didn't turn out effective against Ebola, but later on, some group tested it in the lab on some of the coronaviruses that we had in the past. The first SARS virus in 2002, the MERS virus later on, and found it to work against coronavirus. So now, with the outbreak, with the novel, with the COVID-19 coronavirus, that was a perfect time to study it to see if it works on humans. So it's potentially in the lab it works. We're waiting to see in a well-designed, actually two well-designed studies, how it's going to work on humans.
Okay. For our listeners' sake, for my sake, tell us what a drug trial looks like with the drug remdesivir. And I understand that there are two different clinical trials that are taking place under your guidance right now.
Absolutely. So clinical trials are very important, because regardless how well a drug looks in the lab, regardless if you give it to a couple people or 40, 50 people in a clinical setting, like, you know, in China, when they tried to use drugs just to try it on people, because unfortunately there was no other good option for them, it is always important to study new drugs in the setting of a clinical trial where people get randomized, so randomly assigned to different treatment arms. People are monitored very closely to ensure safety of the drug. And there has been, unfortunately, in the past, drugs that during clinical trials ended up killing people. So that's why safety of a drug is extremely important to test in well-done clinical trials. And you test for efficacy. So you randomize people to different regimens, potentially different doses or different regimen, and you see if it's effective against the outcome that you predetermine at the start of the study. This is really very important, because we don't want people to feel desperate hearing that a drug works in few people and assuming that this is going to save us, it's going to be the right solution. So clinical trials are extremely important, including in this COVID-19 era. We have to test the drug, we have to make sure they work, and we have to make sure they're safe on humans.
And Dr. McComsey, you referenced that the drug remdesivir was developed by a company called Gilead in response to Ebola. It turned out not to be effective in treating that disease, but some other research indicated that there was positive reception when remdesivir was used to treat other coronavirus illnesses that we know as SARS and MERS. And before we went on the air, before we dive a little deeper into these clinical trials that you're leading, you mentioned that Gilead was directly giving remdesivir to some of the illest patients suffering from COVID-19. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about how that process played out?
Sure. So Gilead, while they were working, you know, really hard to start clinical trials, the two trials that we're doing now in Cleveland, they had a program called the Compassionate Access. So if a patient, you know, in New York or Nebraska is really sick, they don't have access to clinical trial, the company was able to provide that specific patient the drug. That's what we call, you know, compassionate basis. And unfortunately, only 2 days ago on Sunday, Gilead issued a statement to say that they have been overwhelmed pretty much by the response to the compassionate use program. So they're modifying that program, and we don't know yet what that means. All we know is for now, temporarily, you can't access that drug directly through Gilead, except for sick pregnant women and sick children less than 18 years of age. The reason they kept those two categories is these are the populations that are excluded from the clinical trials. So clinical trials that we have, both of them are in adult non-pregnant women. So for the pregnant women and for children, if they're sick, Gilead is still given them the drugs. Any treating physician would call Gilead. They set up that program and then get the drug for that specific patient. But other than that, now, as we stand today, people have access to the drug if they're non-pregnant adults only through clinical trials.
Is remdesivir, is it a pill? Is it a liquid? How is it taken or administered?
No, it's intravenously. It's administered intravenously, and this is why both studies, which we'll talk about, are for people who are hospitalized. There are no pills, there are no liquid to take by mouth. It's really intravenously.
Okay, so we're going to talk a little bit more about how all those processes work. We're talking with Dr. McComsey and Dr. Robert Salata is also on the line. They are both from University Hospitals in Cleveland, where two clinical trials are underway to investigate the potential efficacy of this drug remdesivir on COVID-19 patients. And Dr. Salata, before we went on the air, you were talking about a command center that's set up there. I'm hoping that you can give our listeners an idea or set the scene a little bit about what that all looks like as these trials are underway in your medical center.
So they're integrated, but the command center really is based upon disasters, hurricanes, and other things like that that stood up by FEMA and other groups. And it really is looking at all aspects of this problem, from operations to logistics to the clinical issues and operations in that regard, the financial issues that are all upon us at this point in time, pharmacy, et cetera, et cetera. So there is a structure. It's led by our chief operating officer. His name is Eric Beck, but with broad representation. And we've set up a physical location, although we're doing physical distancing as well, in order to promote collaboration between all those groups, plan for surge, and also we report out through either myself or Dr. Dan Simon, who's our chief scientific and clinical officer for University Hospitals, Cleveland Medical Center, what is happening in the clinical trials area. You know, it is really an unprecedented situation that we're faced with. I've never seen anything move so quickly with respect to the first description of cases coming out of Wuhan, China, and to characterization of this virus genetically, and now to have treatment trials available and, starting in April, vaccine trials. And we could talk about that in a different way if you wish. But I think it's been remarkable to see that. And Grace and her group have really been on top of this from the beginning. And what I like about the Gilead studies now is every person will get active drug. There's not a placebo-controlled arm of this. And it's going to be of different duration, as Grace already said. We do need more clinical trials beyond this. And we are looking to stand up, and Grace can give you an assessment of where that stands, a monoclonal antibody against a very potent, what is called interleukin. This is produced by our own white blood cells. It's interleukin 6. And when that is produced in large quantities, it can have deleterious effects in terms of inflammation, including in the lungs. And there have been previous studies of this particular monoclonal antibody that show that this can have a beneficial effect. So that will be another study. We are looking at, as well, in a comparative way to when we were dealing with Ebola in West Africa, and also it was used during the 2009 pandemic influenza time period, as directed by the National Institutes of Health. It is called hyperimmune plasma, meaning you're deriving blood products, all screened appropriately, et cetera, from individuals who have recovered from the disease, with the concept that this contains high levels of protective immune antibodies that may be beneficial in acute illness in other individuals. That would be matched according to their blood type and a number of other things. But that's another approach that's been taken in other infectious diseases that have occurred globally. And we're actually going to initiate a study. Grace knows about this too and has been involved in some of the study design and help with the other things with her statisticians there to look at a spray that's currently available on the market and through Amazon, among other places, where we've studied this in individuals that are otherwise healthy during the flu season. It showed that this product, which is antiviral, sprayed into the mouth, can significantly decrease the numbers of folks that went on to develop upper respiratory infections. So we're going to do this in our healthcare workers, on the front lines especially, to see if we can have an impact on their the transmission of COVID-19 to them and other respiratory illnesses. So we're going to be standing that up pretty soon. But there are a number of things that people are looking at in the research community here at Case Western Reserve University and elsewhere that will look at appropriate immune responses in individuals with this disease, how long it lasts, and looking at recovery and so on and so forth. So I think one of the things that's great to see here in this tragic event is that so many people are stepping up, and we see so much cooperation among colleagues and institutions that normally don't do this very much, but that's really encouraging to see.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We're joined by two doctors from University Hospitals in Cleveland, Dr. Grace McCombsie, who specializes in infectious disease and pediatric infectious disease. And we're also joined by Dr. Robert Salata. He's a program director at University Hospitals Roe Green Center for Travel and Medicine and Global Health. And before I come back to Dr. McCombsie about the specifics of the trials that are underway as it relates to this drug remdesivir that is being tested to treat patients with COVID-19, I want to follow up on something you said, Dr. Salata. You said a lot of things there that I have a lot of questions about that hopefully we'll get to. But the first one was, I guess, the last thing. You mentioned this antiviral spray on the market that you said Amazon, I think. So this suggests it's over the counter and it may have some efficacy in either protecting people or helping people. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
We're going to start the study. And as Grace said before, the reason for conducting a clinical trial has not been used in this context before. And we already know that it's safe to use. We've done two trials that we've published in the literature. but we need to see if it's effective according to what I just told you. So we're going to be pushing that forward in our hospital system. We've had conversations with other hospitals in the area, and they're very keen to work with us and doing this trial too. Anything we can do to help our healthcare workers on the front lines and preserve our workforce is part of all of this discussion as well.
What is that antiviral spray?
It's called Halo.
Halo. Dr. Salata, we appreciate that information. And Dr. McComsey, I'd like to come back to you to talk about these two studies. And just to reiterate, University Hospitals in Cleveland secured two clinical trials that will provide the investigational antiviral drug remdesivir to hospitalized adults with a pneumonia due to the novel coronavirus. One trial focuses on COVID-19 patients with moderate illness. The second focuses on patients with more severe illnesses who may require care in the intensive care unit. These studies are underway. And Dr. McComsey, how many people so far are enrolled?
So we actually secured the study only recently in Cleveland. So so one thing that Bob had mentioned, you know, studies, and then I want to clarify, you know, clinical trials, it takes a long time to act usually. And what we've seen in this pandemic is just amazing. And one thing that happened is usually, you know, Gilead, by the time they work with the FDA to set up studies, it takes months and sometimes years. They did it within less than 2 months. They by the time, you know, I contacted Gilead and we got the studies to Cleveland, usually it takes 2 to 6 months to set up a study. There is a lot of regulatory requirement, you know, IRB, contracts, tons of work that need to be done. We were able to do it in 3.5 days, including a weekend. So I think it is amazing how the community, you know, anybody in healthcare now, regardless of their job at the hospital, they're all a team. And it's amazing to see how everybody's working together because they know that that could save lives. They know it's so important and everybody is working together. So we started the study literally actually 2 days ago. We were activated. They sent us the drug overnight, but these days overnight means 3 days because of all the delays on the highway and transportation. So we just got the drug yesterday to university hospitals, and today, as we speak, they're dosing the first patient. So we're very new to this. It's really hot off the press. We're just starting today. What the studies are, and I know you had asked me, you know, a little more specific. So as you mentioned, both of them are dealing with remdesivir. The first one is for severe disease. So these are people who are hypoxic. They can't maintain their oxygenation in the blood is low. They're hospitalized with a pneumonia and tested positive for the COVID-19 virus. These people will be randomized to remdesivir, either as 5 days or 10 days. So both groups will get the drug, but different duration of treatment. That's for the severe study. For the moderately severe, they're all also people who tested positive, who have pneumonia, who are in the hospital and sick, but they're not hypoxemic. So they're less severe than the first study. They will get one of three different arms. Two arms have remdesivir, one 5 days, one 10 days. The third arm is standard of care, meaning whatever their physician thinks that they should be getting, but not the drug. There's no placebo, so they're not going to get like a dummy liquid injected in their vein. However, we will know that they're on standard of care. At any point during a study, you know, it's people enroll, it's voluntarily. So even something like COVID-19, it's very important to realize that people volunteer for these studies. There are other drugs that were given, you know, off-label in the clinic or in the hospital that could be given to these people. So So we discuss the study with the patients. We discuss what they're going to get, which arm they'll be on. And at any point, if they're getting worse and there are other things we can do for them, like some of the other drugs that Bob had mentioned, they may decide, I don't want to be on the study anymore. So the reason I'm mentioning all that is I don't want to give, you know, hope, a lot of hope. It is promising, a drug. It's very promising. I think it is the most promising. The WHO said that. However, I don't want people to think that this is it. This drug is going to cure it fast. We don't know yet. We know it's promising. We have to see how it does in clinical trials.
Okay, Dr. McComsey, I want to follow up on a couple of things there about the process so far. You mentioned how quickly you were able to get this into clinical trials compared to other drugs. Was that expedited rate of testing, aided by the fact that remdesivir has already been around? It had been tested in Ebola patients, proved to be ineffective there, but also used in other coronavirus situations like MERS and SARS. So we already know certain levels that can be administered to people without, causing harm?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it's one of two things. First, the FDA expedited the Gilead approval to start the studies. So that's because of the situation and because there is no standard of care. There's no treatment available and approved for COVID-19. So there is a rush to expedite it. You know, on our end, the 3.5 days instead of 2 to 6 months is really just our team. Instead of the usual pace, people just work day and night, literally, and a lot of people, we're talking about 25 to 30 people, worked on it. So it was just extensive work because of the crisis to be able to put it together.
And Dr.
It had nothing to do with, at least the UH part had nothing to do with the FDA. It was just realizing that we got to do it. We got to do it fast.
You mentioned, Dr. McComsey, that when Gilead made remdesivir available to people in serious need of some kind of treatment, they ultimately had to stop that because the demand was so high. So people are maybe now hearing about your trial and thinking, I've got to get in that. Is there opportunity for folks to enroll? Are you looking at only the Cleveland area? Or are you accepting patients from elsewhere?
Well, so far, I mean, I have myself received a lot of inquiries from people, unfortunately, even out of state, who saw in the press somehow my name or what UH put out. For now, we have a healthcare system. The UH health system include 18 different hospitals. So within our hospitals, we'll be able to get the drug through studies for people who, you know, volunteer to be on the studies and are eligible. But we haven't reached out outside the system yet. Every hospital could reach out to Gilead and ask them to be considered for the clinical trials. They are continuing to look for sites. I know Ohio is not really high on their list because, you know, Gilead is looking to see how many patients in each state are tested positive. So, of course, now they're focusing on New York and California and other states. I mean, it's good for Ohio that we're not at that level yet in terms of the number of cases. But every hospital interested who have an infrastructure for research should be reaching out to Gilead to see if they could enlist in the study.
We're joined today by Drs. Grace McComsey and Dr. Robert Salata from University Hospitals in Cleveland, where two clinical trials are currently underway to provide the investigational antiviral drug remdesivir to hospitalized adults with a pneumonia due to the novel coronavirus. Dr. Salata, you noted earlier in our conversation that this is somewhat unprecedented, the way that the medical community has had to react to this particular situation. I'm wondering how University Hospitals and your campus there, how you prepare for something like this, not just the potential surge of patients that might be coming in, but also to lead the research component that we're talking about today simultaneously?
Well, this is an enormous challenge, and you've heard about this from several other venues. And, you know, we have put together this team that we spoke about before, this incident command team, and that we're looking at all issues related to proper personal protective equipment for our healthcare workers, the best strategies for caring for patients. We are making ourselves available, as today, to inform the public about the facts and to quell some of the hysteria and panic that's occurring out there. And I think it's only with that concerted fashion, working in conjunction with local, state, national, and even international authoritative bodies, that we can really set forth an important plan. There's no question that the number of cases are going to continue to increase exponentially in the United States, in that we have more testing available, but it's still not at the level that we need. And we are running into shortages with regard to our personal protective equipment and keeping our healthcare workers on the front line safe and away from this disease. But I would also like to point out that the governor and the public health authorities really have taken a very aggressive stance on this. And I think in many ways are to be applauded, because these measures, although some people think of them as draconian in nature, really are the very things that helped in other countries like China, like South Korea, Japan, et cetera. And although there are examples where this is going awry, as in Italy, et cetera, but I think these measures make a difference. Recently, there was a report of where Hong Kong, that city itself, put these measures into place in a very significant way. And when they took their foot off the throttle, so to speak, the cases really exponentially increased again. So many people are wondering why this is happening, how that's affecting their daily lives. But I think in the end, this is one of the most important things that we could do to start leveling the peak of this infection in the United States and actually see it go down.
And Dr. Salata, you mentioned personal protective gear and that you could probably use more of that. What else does the hospital need?
We need ventilators. It's anticipated, perhaps, as has been the case in the state of Washington recently, that they're at 200% capacity in their ICUs. And we need, innovative ways to deal with all of these things. One of the other shortages is just the swabs that are necessary to do the testing in the first place. And people are thinking about other alternatives to that. There's one study out of Hong Kong, again, and we need to learn lessons learned and take the best of the best, where they've now utilized saliva instead of doing a swab of way back in the nose. And if we could do that, that's a so-called convenient sample. It'll really be much more easily obtained and would not require the swabs. But, you know, we need everything. That's the bottom line. And if we look at what's happening in New York, they're overwhelmed by this now, or even Italy, with regard to the fact that they're doing makeshift hospitals and they're bringing Navy ships close to their areas and a number of other things, the National Guard's coming out to help them with this. This is a crisis, and it is a pandemic. But let's keep in mind that 80% of people, unlike the ones that Grace's studies are focused on, really have mild disease and recover well without specific treatment. And I do think as we, however, do more testing in the United States, not only will we see more cases, but we'll see the current death rate, which is about 8% in the U.S., decline, because we'll have a broader denominator to use in calculating that rate. Around the world, the rate is about 2% or so.
And Dr. Salata, are you testing at university hospitals?
We have our own on-site testing platform. That's been in place now for about 10 days, and we're trying to add to that so that we can do more tests every single day. We're currently being able to test as many as 250 samples with a turnaround time of 12 to 24 hours. There are new products and several vendors that we're working with as are other places around the state and country, that will decrease the total time of getting a study done by as little as 45 minutes to 90 minutes. You'll hear about other places that are offering rapid tests, but those are not really based on finding the virus as much as they are the immune response, the antibody response. But the problem is, early on, antibody responses may take a while to develop, so those may not be as accurate as the current studies, which are called PCR. It's a way to find virus and and amplify it up the rate based upon the genetic material and get a readout and call it positive or not. So with that in mind, I think we're going to have new technologies, new techniques, new assays to do more testing and to do this more rapidly. The Ohio Department of Health can do this also fairly rapidly within a 12 to 24-hour period. We have a number of commercial labs that we're using as well. But we are triaging our testing here to hospitalized patients and our own healthcare employees.
Is there any value in CAT scans for testing for this?
Yeah, there's been a number of studies, primarily from Asian countries, where there could be a pattern seen on chest CAT scans that are suggestive. But they're not specific to COVID-19. Other conditions can do the same. And I think we just have to keep that in mind as we continue to experience the volume of these patients and making decisions. If we can get testing back faster and have enough test kits to perform the test, that, in my view, is the best. But these other things like CAT scans can help be confirmatory, if you will, for the diagnosis as we move forward.
Dr. Robert Salata and Dr. Grace McComsey from University Hospitals in Cleveland, we wish you the best with these clinical trials you're conducting on your campus, and we're so grateful for the amount of time you spent talking with us and explaining how it works. Thanks to both of you today.
Thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
And you're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Elise Meckler. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Subscribe to our podcast at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.